Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cinema Joes, the podcast where three average Joes discuss the significant questions in movie culture. My name is Justin, and I am joined here by Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hi, Justin.
And filling in for Noah this week is our buddy Aaron.
Hey, Justin. Hey, Alex.
Hey.
Hi, Aaron.
Well, it's great to have you on the podcast, Aaron. You are our second guest host, I believe, after Jeremy from our last episode, which I thought went really swimmingly. So we're looking forward to having you on here. And we're going to discuss the Alien franchise. We're going to just talk about the movies in general because, Covenant came out a little while ago now. And I know Alex and I have been having some back and forths on that movie along with other movies in the Alien franchise. And I think we have some different values when it comes to this franchise. Certain things that the things that we like in this franchise, I think, are a little bit different from one another. And while I think there's definitely some movies that we agree upon, there's a lot of other movies that I think we really disagree upon, so
yeah, to say the least.
That'll be interesting to talk about, and of course Aaron will have you I guess hopefully not just playing referee but also jumping in with some of your own opinions, because I know you have some pretty strong opinions on this franchise as well.
I do. Most of them are not positive.
Oh no.
I hear ya. Before we get into that, though, we're going to do what we usually do and talk about what we've been watching lately. So, Aaron, as our guest this time, and maybe before we get into that, you know what? Maybe we should just have you talk briefly about some of your interests in media and film, television, and also how you know one of the hosts on the podcast.
Yeah, sure. thanks, Justin. I know Justin because we were actually in a show together. It was his senior year, my freshman year. It was a production of Lend Me a Tenor at our undergraduate institution. It's a great time. Some people would say it's tremendous, but I'm not one of those people. In terms of things I like just about anything. I mean, obviously, genre. I've seen a little bit, maybe a little bit too much of that, so sci-fi, fantasy. But I'm not opposed to a good drama or romance or comedy. In terms of what I've been watching recently, though, I've caught some American Gods. That's on Stars. I finished the season finale today. I watched that. That is a very interesting show. It has cinematography you can't help but notice.
In a good way or in a bad way?
It depends on the episode. It really does, Alex. I mean, the guy's got a distinctive vision, Brian Fuller. I also saw Dear White People.
Ah.
Topic of our last podcast.
Yeah, we talked about that, that show along with other film to TV adaptations.
Yeah, I like that one. Very fun. Very fun. And Wonder Woman. So those are the things I've watched recently.
How about you, Alex? What's something you've been watching lately?
Well, so I have to talk about a film that I kind of that I defended hypothetically in my summer preview episode, and I went and I saw it, and now I feel like I have to apologize to our listeners. The movie is called Rough Night, and it lives up to its name. It's directed by Lucia Aniello, and was written by her and Paul W. Downs. They're most known for Broad City, a TV show on Comedy Central, featuring Alana Glazer, and Abby Jacobson. Alana Glazer is in this movie, along with Scarlett Johansson and Jillian Bell and Zoe Kravitz and Kate McKinnon. They play the main group of women who go on a wild night out and things for a bachelor party, and things take a unexpected turn when a person who they believe was a stripper slash male escort is accidentally murdered by one of them, and then they have to cover up their misdeeds. At the time, when I first brought this up as a movie that I was looking forward to over the summer, or I think actually Justin brought it up as a movie that he was interested in over the summer, as part of like the
I say wary of
yes, as part of a string of like female led group comedy ensembles. Mm-hmm. And I kind of went to bat for it. Justin was a little bit critical of the idea that it was making light of the death of a sex worker, and I said, well, it could have an interesting feminist take on this because the genders are reversed, and you know, they could have like a just an interesting perspective that I thought maybe he wasn't giving enough credit to. And well, I'm here to tell you that he was right and I was terribly wrong. I still believe that there's a world out there that could have made this movie into something intelligent and interesting. That's not the movie that these people decided to make. I also feel like I would see literally any other movie that this ensemble was a part of. Like, in addition to the cast, like the main cast, which is very talented, there's also just tons of like really funny people in the edges of this screen, like Hazeem Minhaj, who has a great stand-up special on Netflix right now, and like Bo Burnham, who's also a really good stand-up that has some good specials out there. Like, just really funny, talented people. The guy who played Dennis Duffy on 30 Rock is in there. You know, he's very funny. But Ty Burrell and Jennifer Connelly, and who play these like really interesting kind of swingers who live next door to the girls, and they get into some stuff. And like, it has the potential to be really good, and everyone in the cast is really strong, but the movie is despicable on like every level. Because the entire time, they just keep making light of the fact that there's like this dead body that they're trying to dispose of, and like it's supposed to be, oh, isn't it hilarious, they don't know what to do, and oh man, they keep moving it, and oh my gosh, now Kate McKinnon's making out with him to make it seem like he's not dead and stuff. And it's just like really, really gross and weird, and not weird in an interesting way, just like I just was so not on the same page with the people who made this movie. And then there's like this thing that happens late in the third act where it turns out that he's not a sex worker. He's someone else. And you're kind of supposed to be like, oh, well, that makes everything better. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to, like, you guys shouldn't see this movie if you don't want spoilers for the movie, skip ahead like a minute. But so the twist is that actually it's a violent criminal who has come instead of the stripper that they thought they were getting. But weirdly, it's like a violent criminal who has stolen a bunch of jewels with two other guys, but then broke off from them and like ran away from them. And he seems, when he comes to the door, to be like really like upset about something, almost, where maybe he was like had a change of heart, and like who knows, like maybe he's actually like a good guy, and he got bullied into doing this, and maybe he decided that like he wants help, and that's why he like, it really seems like he needs help for something. And once you meet his two partners, you think maybe he needed help to get away from these like crazy people. But for some reason, that's supposed to make us feel even better about the fact that they murdered him for no reason. Because he's a criminal, so, you know, criminals don't matter. They should all be dead. Who cares? So, I don't know. It was just, it's terrible. And it's a shame, because there's some good jokes in here, and there's some, like not terribly original, but at least, like, good enough kind of emotional beats. Like, beats that, for instance, were not there in the Ghostbusters movie that came out last summer. Like, it does a better job than that movie does, but like not as good as Bridesmaids on a scale of female comedy ensembles, which I realize now grouping them all together is kind of sexist of me, so I apologize. But yeah, it's just hard to get past how hilarious they think it is that this man is dead and they have to like manhandle his corpse all the time and move him around and put like a penis dildo on his face and just like, it's just so weird and gross and like in a way that they really don't get the, like, or maybe, I don't know. It's not a good movie. don't see it, we should probably move on. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's funny because I remember when you were telling me about it and saying, like, I really thought this had potential and I was so wrong. And I was kind of like, you know, and you had also said, like, there still could be a movie made about this that could actually play with the way this trope has been used. I think what had bothered me originally about it was, like, the fact that our heroes were actually responsible for the death and the subsequent cover-up. And I was like, I guess it can be done, but, like, that just seems to me like it requires, like, a depth control of tone.
Well, it could be done by, like, the Coen brothers, you know? Like,
right.
It could have been.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It could have been, like, done if they acknowledged that they were terrible people doing a terrible thing.
Yeah. Right.
Or just incredibly stupid people who didn't realize how terrible the thing they are doing. But that's not who this is. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a scene where they're like, oh my god, I can't believe this happened. Oh, but now the pizza's here. Well, I guess we should eat the pizza. And then it's like, oh, isn't that so funny? They're going to eat pizza when they just murdered a guy. And it's like, no, that's not funny. That's messed up. And then it's like, I don't know. It's just, they did not get that their characters were coming off really badly, at least for me. You know, I saw it in, like, a not very packed movie theater, but there were some people in there that laughed pretty consistently, so maybe it would work better for other people, but I don't think anyone should go watch it.
Maybe. Well, like, that's a shame.
I've seen several bad movies this year. This is the worst movie that I've seen, definitely. Like, this ranks below the Smurfs, so, you know, take that for what it is.
Oh, wow. Well, that is a shame, and I agree with you. I really was, like, excited when I saw the cast and then kind of crestfallen when I saw the premise.
Yeah. Also, like, Scarlett Johansson is playing this, like, Hillary Clinton-esque figure for the first 15 minutes of the movie that they seem to just completely forget about afterwards. Like, it's
okay.
Really... Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff happening. It's like, wow. The whole opening of the movie is on, like, a terrible campaign ad that is trying to convince us that Scarlett Johansson's character doesn't have any charisma because she's too, like, uptight and controlling and just, like, overstressed and just, like, can't connect to people. And it's like, she's Scarlett Johansson. Like, of course she has charisma. Like, why do you need this in order to do the movie that you're making? But, I mean, and that's not even the bad part.
Ugh. Well, okay.
Jillian Bell is really good in it, even though she's tasked with being, like, a terrible person who the movie doesn't realize is quite as terrible as they think it is. But she actually gives, like, a really good performance.
I've always thought she was really funny.
Yeah, like, and I don't think she gets a chance to shine that often, and she's really a central character in this movie. So, you know, if you're a Jillian Bell fan, maybe. But otherwise, stay away.
Yeah. Well, on a different, slightly different note, what I just watched yesterday, I went to the theater to see it, and I'm glad I did because, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be in the theaters very much longer, is It Comes at Night, which our listeners will remember as my most anticipated film of the summer. It's from Trey Edward Schultz, who, of course, directed Krisha, which is one of mine and also Alex's favorite films of last year. And this film is, I have very mixed feelings about this movie because on the one hand, I really admire the filmmaking and the technique and the craft and everything. And I think it has some really interesting things to say about fear of the unknown and the way that the mind sort of will fill in the gaps when it doesn't have the information that it needs to sort of understand the world. And a lot of the film is shot from the perspective of this one character. So you kind of feel like you're always missing things in... You're sort of missing what exactly is happening and what the circumstances are at certain points throughout the film. The premise of the movie is kind of vague. There is this family who's living in the middle of the woods. Joel Edgerton is the father. Carmen Ejogo is the mother. And they have a son. And there seems to have been some kind of, like, airborne disease, very contagious, almost like the bubonic plague or something, that's affected people. And they're kind of living remotely in the middle of the woods. And they're sort of very routine, like very structured existence is threatened when there's a family that comes to their home and is seeking refuge. And things go downhill from there. So, like I said, I think the film does some interesting things in its technique. I don't know if the film is as involving as I would have liked. I think for as much as the film does in terms of showing this family and what they've been reduced to in trying to survive, I kind of feel like we don't get enough about what their relationship was like maybe before this happened, or how they sort of retain their humanity through all this chaos. That said, there's some very interesting performances. I think Joel Edgerton is especially good here. I love the fact that a lot of the horror in this film, which I'd actually say is more of maybe a psychological thriller, is derived from the fact that these people are very capable of committing violence, but you can tell they desperately do not want to. And that makes for some very tense situations. The film is very bleak, even compared to something like Krisha, which is saying something. So
yeah, Krisha's pretty bleak in the first place.
This is not... I can see why this film hasn't done very well, because it's not the kind of thing... It's not the kind of, like, Annabelle or Conjuring kind of movie, which I think some people were led to believe, maybe through the marketing and through the fact that this is a mainstream horror release. But that said, there's some really terrifying sequences. I think it's and I think ultimately it is interesting enough. I've certainly been thinking about it a lot, though I kind of wish it were more involving than it ended up being. So... not as good as something like Krisha, in my opinion, but I appreciate that I saw it. I don't know if I can say I enjoyed watching it, because it basically put me on edge the whole time, but still, like, an interesting piece of filmmaking. So, I think my thoughts will continue to evolve on this.
My understanding is that it's, like, an emotionally devastating meditation on grief and death. How would you say it lives up to that reputation?
I'd say it's maybe not as much about grief, but certainly the threat of death is pretty constant. So I would say I think pretty early on the film establishes that this is something that's really driving the characters and making them do things that, you know, spell disaster for others. So yeah, it's I don't know if it's a movie that I can recommend other than to say, like, you really have to know what you're getting into.
Okay.
So yeah.
I know that, Trey Edward Stoltz has mentioned in the press that he developed this movie while dealing with the loss of his father from cancer, right? Do you think that knowing that going in helped inform your opinion of the film at all? Or
I would say a little bit. I think there is, like, special attention paid, especially in the beginning of the movie, with the father of the wife character, because he's sort of in the last stages of the disease. This is in the first, like, the very first scene.
Right.
So you certainly see some of that. But I think also what the film gets into with the son, who is not there. So the son and the family. So this would be his grandfather who's suffering from these symptoms. He doesn't get to see his grandfather in sort of the later stages. And you see that he has these dreams where he sort of imagines what the grandfather went through. And in some ways, like, that's more terrifying than actually seeing what the grandfather was going through. So there's a way in which, like, material, like, information that's repressed, you know, sort of like the mind will fill in the gaps and maybe conjure something even more terrifying than the reality. And so I think there's that fear of the unknown. Of, like, you never really know everything of what, you know, every part of what someone's going through, especially someone who's suffering from cancer, and that can actually make it seem even more terrifying. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that was something I was thinking about throughout the movie. So yeah, that's so.
So are we recommending anything from our what we've been watching recently? I was like, I'm not. It doesn't sound like you are, Aaron. Did you like any of the things that you saw?
Dear White People is great. Wonder Woman is certainly the best DC movie since The Dark Knight. American Gods is probably the weakest of the three, and that's still pretty decent. So yeah, I've been happy with my selection.
All right, so everybody go out and listen to Aaron's suggestions and stay away from our things. Oh, and just so everyone knows, we didn't forget about Wonder Woman. We're planning on doing a big Wonder Woman episode once Noah comes back from his extended hiatus. So keep a lookout for that.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to that. So I guess with that, we'll start talking about Alien and maybe like I thought we'd start by just kind of talking about like maybe what brought us to the franchise and also like what are the things that we really like about this franchise. So Alex, did you want to start? Because I know you're probably the newest to the franchise of the three of us.
Yes. So I'm a little embarrassed to say that the first Alien movie I ever saw was Prometheus in 2012. I saw it in theaters the weekend that it came out. I was looking forward to it. I don't know if everyone remembers, but at the time, it wasn't even 100% clear if it was an Alien movie. It was a lot of like rumor, like, oh, it's going to be an Alien prequel, but we're not going to call it that. And oh, maybe it's not really. And, you know, so that it wasn't clear if that was even going to be an Alien movie. So that's probably one of the reasons why I saw it, because otherwise I would have probably stayed away, having no context for the franchise. You know, before then, I just never had any impulse to see any of the Alien movies. I'm not a huge horror film person. I've said before, it's not my favorite genre, and so I'm not a big monster movie guy. I'm not a big slasher movie guy. So the Alien franchise, as I understood it, didn't really appeal to me. I had a friend in growing up who was obsessed with all the Alien movies. She was so excited when the Alien Quadrilogy DVD box set finally came out. But it was not something that ever really appealed to me. But having watched Prometheus and liked Prometheus, I decided that I would at least check out Alien Covenant when Alien Covenant came out this past month. And once I saw that, I felt like that was so steeped in Alien mythology and so clearly pulling from all of the other films that had come before it that I kind of just needed to bite the bullet and watch all of them. So maybe about 2 weeks ago, I just watched all four of the original films in a weekend, and now I've seen all of them.
I want to say I saw Aliens first. That I know. I saw it in middle school, I think. Because I was looking for something different to watch, and it was my dad. You know, he was like, oh, yeah, let's see Aliens. It's a great action movie. I'm like, okay, I'll see Aliens. And I'm like, oh, wow, I really liked that. That was amazing. Let me see the other ones. I saw Aliens and Alien in the same year. It took me a little while to see Alien 3 and Alien 4, Alien Resurrection, probably in high school. I saw them. And then I saw Prometheus. About when Alex did. I saw it in theaters.
Yeah, and for myself, I know, like, I think I watched the first... I did end up watching them sequentially. I think I watched the first Alien when I was in college, and then I want to say like a year later is when I watched Aliens, and it was really interesting because at the time I was really not into horror movies at all, and I only feel like in the last like few years where I've started to like be into more like independent horror, where I've started to feel like, you know, oh, like, I can do these kinds of movies. They don't scare the ever living crap out of me. Because, you know, but like, I'm still. So when I saw Alien, it was like, it very much put me on edge, but I still really enjoyed watching it. I think when I saw Aliens, it was a little bit later, and that one was just like so much fun. And I've since watched these movies a couple more times. I think I've seen Alien thrice and Aliens twice. So I was just like so happy with those movies. And honestly, from there to me, it's just been diminishing returns. I remember watching Alien 3 and feeling like it started off kind of strong, and then by the end I just didn't care, especially when the dog alien was running around. It's so weird to me that was David Fincher's first movie, though.
Hearing I think it's about, weird to him also.
Yeah, hearing about all the different studio interference and all the rewrites that happened doesn't really surprise me. Alien Resurrection I watched and was just like, I actually watched it because I think it was being reviewed by the Nostalgia Critic, who did a pretty hilarious review of it. And I just like that movie. I just was like, I got to a point where I was like, okay, this is like so over the top ridiculous, I don't even know what I'm watching anymore. So that was a really strange experience. And Prometheus was something that I think I liked when I first saw it, but then sort of drifted away from over time, especially as I sort of thought through more of like what was happening in these movies and how I felt like the philosophy wasn't being sort of explored in the movie proper, but just kind of mentioned by characters. And I remember really liking the atmosphere of that movie, though. And I think that's something that the better movies in this franchise have done really well. Saw Covenant this year, really disliked it. Felt like I didn't even like got to like I was already kind of reluctant to see it in the first place, but I had so many friends who were gonna see it, so I kind of was like, all right, I'll see it, maybe it'll be good. I don't know, it's just it's somewhere in the same category with Prometheus to me. But we can get more into sort of what works for us and what doesn't work for us in this franchise.
Do you think that you would like Alien Covenant better if it was called Prometheus 2: David's Revenge?
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't think I would like the movie if it wasn't like whether it's connected or disconnected from the Alien franchise. I don't think it's a good movie.
Because I feel like it's so clearly like the first four movies were a series of films. I hate the term quadrilogy. I'm not going to dignify it. A series of films around Sigourney Weaver's character, obviously. And I think that they're really building the Prometheus series of films around David's character, which I think is a really interesting way to go, because he's clearly the best character, at least in my opinion, of those two movies that he's been in.
Yeah, I would agree.
And so I feel like tying it back to Alien with the name was kind of a mistake. I think that they should just give, you know, that they should lean into the Prometheus of it all instead of trying to grab the Alien namesake again, because I think it was kind of confusing for audiences a little bit. Because in a lot of ways, the most recent Alien movie was much more of an Alien movie than Prometheus was. But at the end of the day, it's still David's story, and David is very tangentially related to the original series of Alien films.
Yeah, and I think like I think originally it was going to be more of a sequel to Prometheus, and I guess because they didn't get the response they had anticipated, they decided to go with the Alien name because it's more familiar, and I think was poised certainly as like a return to form for Ridley Scott.
That's how it was marketed,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, I'd say like for me, the first two movies like work together well, but I think what Cameron learned from the first Alien movie was that you couldn't do the same movie again, but you could still kind of echo it. You could still sort of draw upon its essential. You still draw upon elements of it. And I think there are horror elements in Aliens, even though Aliens is more of maybe an action film.
Yeah, definitely.
But I love the fact that he didn't repeat the same movie, but at the same time still like had enough callbacks and enough of the essence of that movie to make it work, but also make it work within a new genre. And I'm not quite sure. I kind of feel like that's what they're trying to do with Alien Covenant and probably with Prometheus as well, where they are trying to go in a new direction with it. I just think they're less successful with these sort of bigger ideas than the earlier movies were in sort of delivering genre thrills. And I would certainly say the first two movies are better at genre thrills than any of the subsequent movies.
So I'll say the one thing that I thought was really interesting, and it became very clear to me, I think, just because possibly because I saw so many of the Alien films in such a short, compact amount of time, is that they really, despite the fact that aside from the two most recent ones, which are obviously part of the same director's vision for like a sequential series, all of the films have interestingly different creative teams behind them. And they tell distinct stories, and yet they all have somewhat similar beats, where they all start out that following that same template that the first Alien set up, where you spend an extended period of time, longer than you typically would, establishing characters, establishing the setting, trying to create stakes and tension outside of the alien force. And then all of a sudden, about like 35 minutes, sometimes 45 minutes into the movie, then the alien comes, and then like everything goes crazy, and slowly the big cast starts getting picked off, and the people that you don't expect to die, and the people that you do expect to die end up making it out okay. And then like the big climax at the end between your lead heroine and the alien. Mm-hmm. And then you think that she won, but then it turns out that they didn't win because there's one more thing that happens that you don't expect, and so you have that moment where you have this false sense of victory, and then, oh no, it's back. And then finally it's actually dead. And that's like every single one of them, even Prometheus and Covenant, yeah, hit those same familiar beats. And I think that's really interesting given how different each of these movies are, that it could maintain that same structure to make the franchise feel coherent, even though it has wildly different genres and tones and creative visions within that template. What do you think about that, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, so I actually agree with that sort of analysis. I do. There's a familiar structure to the films, even if they are very different. But I think one of the problems that the Alien franchise has, and I think the structure is actually the strong point of the franchise as a whole, but also sort of emblematic of its weakness. I'm not necessarily convinced that Alien as a franchise has much particularly to say. I think it's very thematically strong. So that's why I think there is something nice about the fact that it has the same beats, that it has the same kind of flow, even if the movies are very different. That's the depth of Alien. The depth of Alien is just that it's the same basic idea just over and over and over again. Now, maybe that could be a larger commentary on the nature of life or the nature of sexual violence, sexual abuse, because, you know, watching Alien 1, that's clearly a lot of symbolism there related to
certainly
sexual violence.
Imagery.
And if the subtlety was confusing, there's also that scene where the robot tries to kill Ridley with a porno mag in the mouth, you know.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I think the franchise is a very surface level franchise. I don't think there's a lot of depth to it. So it has to rely on excellent technique and excellent writing in order to be watchable. I think Justin and I agree that our favorites are Alien and Aliens.
Okay, yeah, let's get into that. So, does everybody have like a definitive Alien franchise ranking? Because you know I do, because I love lists. So, have you guys all considered that, like how you would put all the films? Okay, cool. So I'll go first.
Sure.
I'll tell you what my from worst to best.
Okay.
I say that Alien 3 is clearly the worst of all the films. Followed for me by Prometheus, then Alien Covenant, which I know is a little controversial, then Alien, because I know that's like sacrilege. Everyone thinks Alien's the best, but I think it's only the third best. And then Alien Resurrection, because I'm a crazy person, and finally Aliens, which I think is objectively the best film in the franchise. Just the most effective, most well-made, best characters, best use of their characters across the board. Just like a near-perfect movie, in my opinion.
Well, I can say my ranking for these films is the I would have like there's like a close, I would say Alien and Aliens are so I love them both, but I love them for different reasons. If I have to give the edge to one, I give the edge to the original Alien. I think there's something about its more contained nature that I really appreciate. I think it's more terrifying just having this one alien moving around this spacecraft than a bunch of aliens that, you know, end up becoming machine gun fodder. But at the same time, I think what Aliens does so well is just, like, puts you on this thrill ride with amazing tension and amazing suspense and, like, drawing upon the original Alien while also establishing its own identity. And kind of like the first Alien movie, does a really good job of having this patience. It takes forever for us to see that huge alien nest. And when it comes, the Marines are utterly unprepared. So I like them both. I give the edge slightly to the original Alien just because I think it's like there's something about its more contained nature and that I just find even more suspenseful. And then at the back is pretty much is everything else. I really don't like any other movie in this franchise, and I kind of feel like ranking them is just kind of, to me, is just kind of arbitrary. It's like, I just feel like those first two movies are so much, like, there's just such a drop-off for me between the first two and any other movie in this franchise that I just feel like, I don't know. I just don't know if it'd be worth it for me to try to rank them. But I know Alex, you have, you know, that I know that you love Alien Resurrection a lot. So
I really do.
Which, and I'm sure we'll get into that because I'm interested to hear why. Aaron, do you feel different than that? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you guys. If, you know, if we have to select the worst of them, it's obviously Alien 3. I mean, that's just a dumpster fire that doesn't provide
warmth.
I think
overall, that's the one I would least want to revisit. So, there we go. I'll put that one out there.
And then I feel like the Prometheus and Alien 4, I think they're kind of in the same boat. I would put Alien 4 ahead because I think there's a certain camp to Alien 4 that makes me laugh at times.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But in terms of the movies that I actually would recommend people watching, I give the edge to Aliens.
Yeah.
Well, it's just I agree with Alex. I think it's an incredibly well-made movie. I think the characters are all memorable. I like the fact that they set up at the very beginning that these people are competent and they have no shot of making it out alive. I think that's I guess spoilers for all of you who haven't seen Aliens, but
yeah, this is a spoiler full zone, so, you know, feel free to spoil.
Excellent. Well, yeah, no, I mean, Sigourney Weaver, Hicks, and Newt, and everyone else is dead. Well, Bishop, but, you know, he's an android, so.
Oh, he's the heart and soul of the team, come on.
He is the heart and soul of the team.
Saves Ripley's life.
Thing that I think...
It's a great movie.
The reason why I think that Aliens is just objectively better than Alien is because every one of those main characters, and the main characters are like, you could list off like six or seven of them, they all have an arc. And that's just not something that you get with the Alien movie. And, you know, there's something to be said about having storytelling that's not quite as clean as Aliens has it, where there's a little bit more ambiguity and there's a little bit more rough edges, because that's obviously much more like how life is. Because, you know, everyone doesn't get an arc in life over the course of 2 hours, you know. But I really think that despite that, a movie is more entertaining when you can really feel invested in a character and see them going on a journey. And I think every one of those characters in Aliens has a journey that you can get emotionally invested in. And then on top of that, I think a lot of the action set pieces are very effective. They're still scary. I think that all of those aliens, even though there's a little bit of fatigue when it comes to, like, you think that one alien was terrifying in the first movie, and then there's like a million aliens that they're fighting, so kind of dulls the effectiveness in some ways. But they were still scary to me. I thought that they were a compelling antagonist, especially considering the way that they kind of operate in a hive mind and are more intelligent than you might expect them to be at first. And I think all that stuff works really well. And then, you know, it has this iconic ending that I've heard about for years, probably for as long as I can remember, the whole with Ridley giving that famous line, like, "Get away from her, you bitch." And so I'm sitting there watching the whole movie waiting for that scene to happen, because I don't know where that line is in the movie, but I know that it's there somewhere. And then I hear it, and it's totally effective, and it really works. And it shouldn't, because it's been so overplayed in culture, and I've been so overexposed to it. And it's still excellent. I love it. So yeah, I think that it's better than Alien, which to me, I just feel like it was limited by a lot of, like, the practicality. Like, they did the best that they could, but, you know, you never really get a clear sense of what the alien even is. But, and I think that they try to lean into that and make it mysterious, but it doesn't feel like Jaws, where it's like this imminent presence. It just feels like, oh, they couldn't quite, you know, get a wider camera angle on the alien, because then you'd see it was a puppet, you know. And then, like, at the end when it's a guy in a suit, it, like, so looks like a guy in a suit, and it's not scary at all. And I don't know, I just had a hard time emotionally connecting to the terror of that film. And I'm a scaredy cat. I don't like scary movies at all. Usually it's pretty easy to get me scared of something. And I just was out of it for a lot of it. You know, there's some sequences, obviously, like the chestburster scene is, like, iconic for a reason. But I don't know, I just didn't invest in the characters enough to care about how they were feeling. And I didn't find the actual alien scary enough to be compelled on its own. So that's why it's lower on my list. Like, I kind of, if it wasn't for the fact that it was made in the 70s, you know, and it was from another era, I probably would even rank it lower than I do now, in terms of quality. Like, I think that, like, I consider it like a 4.5-star movie, but if that exact movie came out today exactly like the way it was, it would probably only be like a 3.5-star movie for me. It was just so, like, I respect the fact that it was innovative and that it set a tone for a generation of films, but as a movie itself, not just as a historical artifact, it just didn't work as well for me as I expected it to.
Yeah, I want to take just a little bit of time to respond to something you're saying about the alien itself. One thing that I appreciate about the movie that I think you touched upon a little bit is that it keeps changing form, and that from moment to moment it kind of looks different, but also that I know you feel like it doesn't work like Jaws in that, you know, where you feel this presence and you don't see a lot of it. But I think there's a lot that Ridley Scott does in the sequences, especially where the alien attacks people, where you're not seeing the full thing, where you're sort of like getting like a little glimpse of it, or you're also getting like this huge buildup to the actual kill. And I love what Ridley Scott does in those sequences, because he builds them up because they're largely defined by like brief spurts of violence that are then immediately followed by silence. And that's something that I feel like is immensely satisfying to me, as someone who appreciates horror, is that's kind of what, you know, that's what I imagine. To me, that just speaks to the horror of life, these spurts of violence that are eventually, that are, you know, immediately followed by this sort of false sense of peace and tranquility. And a lot, like, you see that in the scene where Harry Dean Stanton is killed, where there's a huge lead up to that, and then he's sort of like taken, and then it immediately cuts to the cat just watching him, and then just the sound cuts out.
Yeah, I hated that. I hate that they cut to the cat. It feels so cliche and like. We need to see it through the cat's eyes. Alien helped create that cliche. So like, yeah. I get that. But it just takes me out of the moment to like be like, oh, and look, the cat saw the whole thing, you know? It's like, really? Okay.
But I love like you don't know like what the heck like the cat is like. I mean, it's just like an animal looking at like it just seems like what a cat would do. Just look at
it.
This,
just
like,
I don't know. There's just like there's a false there's like a false sense of profundity in like putting the camera on the cat after all of that violence. You know?
Yeah. I don't see it as like trying to be profound. I just see it as like this moment of like this is the only living creature that's left kind of thing. To like who bears witness to this.
I do like how another reason why I think Aliens is better than Alien is because Ridley calls that cat an asshole way more often.
Well, and in the first Alien, I believe at one point she actually goes back to rescue the cat.
Yes, it's just something
I feel like that some of the later movies are missing is the Ripley character. Particularly, I mean, I'm speaking of Prometheus and Covenant. But I guess
can't you let poor Ripley die, Justin?
What's that?
Can't you let poor Ripley die?
I mean, obviously the movie franchise couldn't because they made Alien Resurrection, but I just feel like there hasn't been another protagonist we've had since her that really is sort of, you know, obviously you want to do something different, but I just don't know if there's a character that's been as distinctive. I mean,
well, I think David has been. David is distinctive. Like that's what I like about Alien Covenant is that they lean into what like the fact like Prometheus is kind of like a jumbled mess of characters. Like it's that you never get a clear sense of who you're really supposed to be rooting for or invested in,
right.
And that's definitely one of the flaws. But I think that in retrospect, having seen Covenant, like you can go back and watch Prometheus more as like an origin story for David, and it becomes a better film. And I think that it was smart for Covenant to kind of lean into that and lean into their best character and decide like, no, this franchise is going to be about David, and David is a very different kind of character from Ridley. And I think that brings out a very interesting element to the franchise that wouldn't be there otherwise.
You meant Ripley, right? Sorry.
What did I say?
You said Ridley.
Oh, yeah, Ridley, sorry.
I just wanted to make sure people didn't think you were talking about Ridley Scott or something.
Yeah. Ridley Scott wouldn't save the cat.
No. Yeah. I did also want to respond to something you said about the characters in the first Alien, because I think what I really love about those characters is that we established, like, I think they're very well established. One of the very first scenes is of the crew having breakfast with one another, and you get the sense, like, these characters have a shared history with one another. Like, you start to see some of the, like, little hostilities, but there's also, like, this kind of, like, joking nature to everything. Like, these guys are just, like, you know, blue-collar, like, space truckers basically, and that's what to me makes like the movie like terrifying, maybe more in a, like at least conceptually is the fact that these people are so ill prepared to deal with whatever threat is, you know, haunting them. And
yeah, I experienced those characters very differently. I felt like they were just pretty much stock characters for the most part. You know, I think that Ripley is the most interesting one. But even she doesn't get a tremendous amount of depth in the movie. I think that the movie suffers from a lack of depth. You can kind of sum up each one of their characters by one character trait.
I totally disagree with that.
No, but like Brett and Parker, they're just like the working class guys who just want to party and make money. And like Lambert is the one that's scared all the time. And Dallas is the hero who has too much hubris and ends up being undone by it. And it's like, you know, and Kane is the one who's too curious for his own good. And, you know, it's like that it's so superficial. And then Ash is like, he is the scientist who doesn't know how to control like the elements. Like he thinks that he has more power than he actually does over what he is studying. And it's like, you know, and like they're not terrible renditions of those stock characters, but those are stock characters. There's not a tremendous amount of depth. They don't feel like real people. I think that the actors do their best to try to bring a lived experience to them, and I give them credit for that, but I think the writing kind of fails them. And I think that it kind of made me understand the Alien franchise as a whole much better, because once you realize that this is a series that has never invested that deeply in most of their characters, then you kind of appreciate it on that level and stop trying to hold it to a standard that not even the first movie was able to make. But I feel like I'm in the minority in that opinion. I know I've heard a lot of people say that they really like the character work in the original Alien, but it didn't connect for me.
Yeah, I really don't agree with your assessments of these characters, I guess, because the thing with Parker and Brett for me is that, like, these guys are used to, like, not just that they feel like second-class citizens on this ship, but also, like, they've gotten so used to that they actually, like, can joke about it. And I think over the course of the film, certainly, I mean, Brett gets killed off kind of early on, but seeing Parker, like, really, like, Parker's the one who, like, gives his life in order to try to save somebody. I mean, sure, he's not.
Is that successful. What happens in that scene? Because I feel like the choreography is terrible and you can't tell anything that's going on in it. In fact, I actually learned later after seeing it that they actually inserted some shots of the alien from the scene where he was killing Brett into that scene because they needed more shots of the alien in it. Hmm. Like, which to me helped clarify why it felt so incoherent.
As incoherent as anything in Alien Resurrection or Alien Covenant. I mean, I just, like, I watched that scene recently and I didn't have a problem following it. I had a real problem following anything in Alien Covenant or Resurrection. I mean,
well, listen, I think that Covenant is like a very, like, the things that Covenant does well is not necessarily, you know, its action scenes. Although there's one action scene that I think is very I thought there was one action scene and one horror scene in those movies in Covenant that impressed me. But for the majority of it, I would not say that it was impressive. And those were impressive at least the action scene was impressive mostly for how it subverted my expectations for how that action scene was going to go.
Which one are you talking about?
The one where they're on the aircraft trying to get back to the ship. I don't want to be too specific because I don't want to, in case Aaron ends up watching it.
Okay. Are you?
No, it's okay.
You're definitely not going
to. Someone already spoiled.
Okay, it's the one when they're trying to leave the planet, and the alien is on, and he's like swinging around and stuff, and they have to use the claw. I thought that was really interesting. That's not how I expected the scene to go. I thought it was just going to be kind of like they're going to shoot it with its guns or whatever, but it gave the opportunity to the heroine to kind of show that she's intelligent and try to beat it with her brain instead of just with, like, force and the brutality that the alien is bringing to the table.
But
I thought that was interesting.
The way she's swinging around the ship, like, it's like the camera can't even, like, keep track of her. Or the alien. I mean, like, there's a scene where I think the alien is supposed to be, like, trying to, like, claw at her from, like, inside the claw of that, like, crane thing. And it's just, like, you don't, like that scene compared to, like, a scene from Aliens where, like, you get these shots of, like, both of them, where it's even like, I mean, that scene in Aliens is better lit, so you can actually tell what's going on. But, like, I think because that scene on Covenant is so murky,
And but like, also, like, they're both occupying the same physical space.
Right.
It's one is in a CGI yes. creation, you know.
Yeah, the in-camera thing I mean, really does a lot, and that's why, like,
and it's scarier I mean, you could teach the actions later. You could on. Teach the action scenes in Aliens in a film class. Sure. You know, like, I mean,
yeah.
it's kind of a high bar to hold against.
Yeah, I just wanted to like bring up a movie that does action well versus one that doesn't.
Okay, fair enough. Aaron, you haven't said anything recently. Do you have any thoughts on this discussion?
I mean, I will say this about Aliens. Aliens establishes who its characters are pretty much when they wake up. An alien gives you a long time. I mean, whatever it is, 30 or 40 minutes. So you have a good sense of what they are. But you also know that they're food... which I think also kind of gets in the way of empathizing with them. And this actually goes to my larger problem with the idea of making David the focus of a second Alien franchise, because he himself is a predator. He is not Alien v. Predator, but he is out for his own. He is willing to, you know, kill the other characters as well. And when you have him going up against aliens or engineers or whoever the hell is it's going to be in the future, you just know all the humans are going to die. I mean, you just got to go in knowing that. So it's like, why should I feel invested in any of these assholes? And especially in Prometheus, they were all assholes. And you're just like, yeah, you're not making gosh. It out. I know you're not.
You want to talk about some poor characterization. Oh my god.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, you know, although I think that I really like the first hour of Prometheus. I think that they set up a lot of stuff in that movie, and they try to build a lot of interesting character dynamics, and I think that it's not the best written characters, but I think the actors really bring a lot of charisma and a lot of presence to all of the characters. And then I think that they just systematically assassinate all of the characters in the second half of the film, both literally in the film and then figuratively, like in terms of stripping away all the things that made them interesting characters.
I couldn't
buy them as being like the best and brightest minds once they all decide, hey, you know what? There aren't any parasites in the air. Let's just take our helmets off.
Why is that
off.
A
As
thing
if there's nothing
in this,
else.
These last two movies of them taking their helmets off. Oh, it's okay. The air is breathable. What if there are pathogens in the air? Oh, in Alien Covenant, there actually are pathogens in the air. And that's what makes things that's what makes things go downhill so fast.
These people are stupid. I mean, what does it why? Why do you take off your helmets?
Yeah, listen, I'm not saying you are.
These Alex,
you know, I mean yeah. I agree that those two films have flaws. I think that the things that are interesting about them are almost entirely around the character of David, and the way that Michael Fassbender plays him. And I think the ideas that Ridley Scott's trying to play around with in terms of creation and in terms of like if we only exist because the people who could make us made us only because they could, then what does that say about our existence, and what do we have to do from there to try to justify why we're alive and to make our lives meaningful? And I think that that's interesting ideas, and I think the Alien franchise is a bizarre place to play out those ideas, but I think that in that bizarreness, something compelling creeps up. That's what I would say is the redeeming quality of those two movies.
I definitely agree with you that the ideas are interesting. I feel like they're paid lip service and not really explored in the rest of the movie. I think that's something that.
But Michael Fassbender makes out with himself, so
yeah.
I don't see how you could say that
there
the
is,
ideas aren't.
There is something
observed.
Very amusing about watching Michael Fassbender seducing himself. Although I will say, I mean, I already had some problems with the screenplay, but the one line, which I don't know, hopefully it was not improvised, but the line of "I'll do the fingering" really, I think, made my audience howl.
That was definitely on purpose. That was on purpose.
Just like,
that was
like,
not an accident.
Yeah,
in the script.
That just like. No, I know it was on purpose. I just really like. It's not already explicitly phallic enough.
If anyone is going to sell that, Michael Fassbender can sell that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just going about the themes and Ridley Scott trying to explore these themes. I mean, the reason why he can't really explore themes about creation and life and what's the purpose of it all in this franchise is because he already did it in Blade Runner.
I have heard that. Blade Runner is a huge blind spot for me.
Yeah, it is for me as well. I plan on seeing it before the new one comes out.
Same.
But
yeah.
I feel like a million film snobs just like cringed by me saying that.
Yeah. Don't worry, we're in the same club here.
Listen, if you put Ryan Gosling in a movie, I'll see the original. That's just, you know.
You're saying Jared Leto's presence wasn't what did it for you?
Yeah, let's not get into Jared Leto right now, okay?
He was the best Joker ever. That's why they only gave him 10 minutes of screen time.
Well,
yeah, the
knows?
Less we say about the Suicide Squad, the better.
Oh, yeah. I do want to take some time from complaining about the last two Alien movies to echo your
complain
praise.
About the third Alien movie. Oh, sorry, what?
No, I did want to also,
we could all hate on Alien 3. I mean, that's a
I'd also wanted to praise Michael Fassbender, who I think is immensely watchable, and I just love how distinct he makes Walter and David from one another. You can always tell, like, it's like I would honestly compare it to something like Nicolas Cage in Adaptation in terms of like just embodying different physicalities.
Oh, it's so much better than Nicolas Cage in Adaptation. Nicolas Cage in Adaptation is so, no, I love Adaptation, but he is so like quirky and ticky in that movie. Like this, like what Michael Fassbender does is so much more subtle and interesting.
Yeah, like there's a way in which Walter interacts with David where you can tell that he's like very wary of him, but also sort of open to at least hearing David out. And like that's something Michael Fassbender can just do with his face alone. And also while being Walter distinctly.
Yes.
That's something that I was really impressed with in the scenes where he does interact with himself. I also think that there's a great moment when he's basically like he basically has Catherine Waterston's character at his mercy, and he kisses her and comes away from it like, is that how it's done? And it like genuinely seems like he's curious, like he genuinely wants to know. Yes, as David. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
And there was something like very childlike about David in Prometheus, which I also think like is carried over into Covenant, that is still like shows that this character has grown and sort of maybe established a new, you know, sort of course of action for himself, but still like retaining that childlike wonder. So yeah, I'm gonna, as much as I like have, as much as I dislike these two movies, I feel like Fassbender is unquestionably the best thing in them.
Yes. And also, you can't deny that, like, the flashback scene where he just, like, lets loose all of the alien goo onto the entire planet and just, like, stands up there like a boss. Like, that was such a badass moment.
mean,
it makes no sense in terms of what we know about how that thing works, because they all just, like, get petrified. Like, it's, like, Pompeii for some reason. And also, I guess the entire planet is just, like, standing on that square. So it's super
evidently
stupid, but it's such a great, like, FU moment for David, who's like, my creator sucks. He sucks because you created him to suck, so now I'm gonna fucking kill you all. Like, that's just, it's just a great moment.
Yeah, I will give you that one, at least from the perspective of Fassbender in that scene.
Well, and also because you think that this whole movie, like, Prometheus sets up a sequel where him and Noomi Rapace go out and find the engineers. And then you find out, like, oh, no, he was just totally screwing with her. And he, like, killed her and then just killed the entire planet of engineers just because he could, And it was like, and because they deserved it, because he's better than them. And, like, yeah. I think he is better than them. So it's a great, like, wait, what moment in a movie, you know?
Yeah, I wish that sequence were more terrifying than it ends up being.
It's supposed to be victorious,
so, like,
though.
Murky and like, but the CGI is just like so murky and so like, and like you're not invested at all in these people, especially if you've seen Prometheus. But
I don't think you're supposed to be terrified. I think it's supposed to be like this victorious moment for David, which should make you feel kind of like not great, but not like horrified, because we know that these people wanted to murder all of us.
Right.
So like,
exactly.
They're not, you know, so like, we're not like, oh no, these innocent people. But no. But it also like, it says something really bad about David that he could just just so effortlessly murder an entire civilization with one swoop.
See, but like, we don't really have a sense of that civilization. So to me, it was just kind of like, all right, more people who die. Like, it didn't like have that kind of impact. That
if you're emotionally connected to David in that moment, then that moment works.
I did want to get into Resurrection a little bit.
Yeah, it's time for me to defend my ridiculous opinion.
Please do, because I am really like, I'm genuinely interested, because like, I was like, I had to like adjust, be like, wait. Resurrection? That's the one he's talking about? That one. Okay.
So let me tell you. So after Alien 3, Ripley dies, and the alien dies with her, and you kind of, like, that's the end of the franchise, right? Like, there's no way that you could bring it back. But because it's a very successful franchise, the studio demands that it exists. And so you end up with a film that's called Alien Resurrection, where everyone involved realizes how absurd it is that Alien would continue past Alien 3. And they lean into that absurdity, and they push it to the absolute limit of how absurd it could be. And they just, like, are, like, they luxuriate in it. And I think that it's, like, creates this like ridiculous, glorious picture of how absurd a movie that shouldn't exist can be, and I just loved every minute of it. Like the people behind this movie get that this movie should not exist. They get that it's ridiculous. Like, that's what I feel like people don't understand when they talk about like, oh, this movie's terrible. It's like, no, everyone knows that this movie has no reason to exist in the first place, so they decided to make a movie that shouldn't exist, and I think that that's great. Like the Ripley clone should not exist. It's ridiculous, like, way to kind of like a gimmick to get Sigourney Weaver back into the franchise. So they lean into it and they make her a ridiculous, campy character who's like has no reason to exist in the film. The ultimate creature at the end is like this absurd thing that is ridiculous, because how can you top all of the alien stuff that's come before it? And you know that they need to top it some way, so they just lean into the absurdity of it. I love it. I think that it's like the most self-aware and irreverent movie that I've seen in a while, and I really, really dig it.
I was wondering if that was like, if you were kind of like enjoying it on a camp level.
It's the only way to appreciate it.
Like, that's like kind of like the way I interact with this movie is that I just think it's like I think it's like far more entertaining than something like Alien 3 for sure. But
well,
I don't know if like. It's one of those things where I'm like, this is so, because I just think it's so hilariously awful. And I feel like on a conceptual level, what you're describing sounds interesting, but to have an entire movie of that with like zero tension and like zero, like where you don't care about anything that happens, it's just kind of like, I'd rather watch something like Troll 2, honestly, if I'm gonna like.
I don't know. I think that I cared about the people within the movie, even though the movie was absurd. Like, you could still have an emotional connection. Like, Sigourney Weaver is giving an incredible performance. Like, there is an element of absurd camp to some of it,
you know, right?
But it's also so like dark, and like I love when she's saying like, oh, like there's this scene in towards the beginning of it where she's meeting with like the scientist, like she's eating lunch or whatever in the cafeteria, because you know, and the scientist comes over and he's like, yeah, no, we're really great at this, and she's like, you know, you're all gonna die, right? Like, this is just, and she says it like she's so over it because the audience is over it. They know what's going to happen. And like, how could you possibly expect people to care about it? So she doesn't care about it and we don't care about it, but then they die anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
so why do we care about this movie then?
Because they know that we shouldn't care about it. And so we can kind of like emotionally connect on that level, you know?
I think you're right about the camp factor of it. Certainly a fun watch at times. My issue with it structurally is, it's truthfully the same issue I have with Prometheus and with what you guys have described about Alien Covenant. I think when Sigourney Weaver came back from the dead, I don't even know. I mean, she felt, she was more than human, if I recall, when she came back from the dead. It wasn't just like they cloned her and her alone.
Yeah, it's that she has the alien DNA inside of her, yeah.
Within her, yeah. So she has become a predator. There's no narrative tension there anymore. Because, you know, she can, now she's got that extra oomph that she didn't have before when she was kicking the ass of these aliens. So now it's like just going to Easy Town. I think it's very hard to be invested in a narrative structure where you are taking the perspective and enjoying the perspective of the person that's a hunter. I think it is. I think especially with a horror franchise, I think with an action movie as well, I think it's almost always better to focus on prey than it is to focus on predators. Mm. And unless you're going to do it excellently, like, I don't know, like John Wick, basically, it's hard to really appreciate it on a quality level.
I suppose. I don't think that that's much of a problem for Alien Resurrection, you know? I mean, like, if you compare what Alien Resurrection does to a movie like Alien 3, which, like, Alien 3, like, it's also kind of ridiculous, the characters in that movie, but they take them so seriously, you know? It's like they're all these, like, bald, British, murderous rapists, and they're all, like, they seem completely interchangeable. Like, you don't ever get a sense of who any of these people really are, outside of, like, one or two exceptions. And it's, like, but it's supposed to be, like, really serious and dark, and, like, she's dealing with the fact that she's gonna die, and it's so dreary, and, like, they're trying to do something interesting, but then they're also trying to make a fun horror movie, and it doesn't work at all. And like, because it didn't know what it was. Like, Alien Resurrection knows exactly what it is, and it has a good time being what it is. And I think that that's like, what else can you ask for a movie than to be the best version of what it is that it could be? And I think that's what Alien Resurrection is. And like, I know you said that you don't care about the characters, but you have to admit that when that, like, abomination of an alien hybrid gets sucked out of, like, literally aborted from the ship, like, that's heartbreaking. Like, when it screams out in pain and she's sitting there and she's like, she knows that it shouldn't exist and that it has no reason to be, that it should never have been created, and yet she has an emotional connection to it, and it, like, it's sad to see that it be tortured like that into death. Like, it's an emotional moment, even though it's ridiculous at the same time. Like, that's just a feeling that I like, no movie makes me feel that way, and I really have to applaud it.
Well, I'm glad that scene made you feel that way.
I kind of laughed at it, but I will give you, I will say this to Alexander's point, I think that the camp is something to really like about it, and I think Prometheus would have benefited immensely had it taken itself less seriously than it did. Because clearly the quality of writing was not going to be there for a good series.
Yeah, Prometheus takes itself very seriously.
But why not, guys?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. If it was campier, I think it would have been a much more enjoyable experience. And they should have shot for that. Ridley Scott should have recognized, hey, I'm not as good at this as I used to be.
I just like, Getting back to the death of the newborn in Resurrection, I just, like, I feel like that's a scene that they want us to be emotionally, and clearly you were, Alex, but I know for myself I was not, because the only like the way the newborn interacts is just to kill people. I mean, why is it any different from any
It doesn't though. Like that's it's tortured because it doesn't know how to interact. It's fighting. It's it has this one impulse to just murder and then this other impulse
but how does
to
make
love
it different from
and for
any of
no
the
because
other
it also has an impulse. It also has an impulse to love and form a human connection,
because
and it doesn't know how. It doesn't know how to go, like to reconcile the two. It's in tremendous distress because of that, and that's why it shouldn't exist. But it does, and it's beautiful and ridiculous. Like those eyes that it has, like those cartoon eyes. They just like consume your soul, and you're just like, oh, it's just like a little baby, and he just wants to be loved, but he has this impulse to murder things, and he doesn't understand it, like. The scene when the alien gives birth, and he's
understand what he's doing when he kills the alien in that one scene.
No, it's like no, it was just like a base reaction. It felt like to me,
like
and,
a
then
level
it,
of
and then it
and then it. I'm not seeing from
it. Well, it was like instinctual, like like it comes out of the womb of the alien, and then the like queen is just like it was like looks at it so lovingly and is like, oh my baby, and then she's just like instinctively just like rips her head off, and then he just runs over to Sigourney Weaver and is like, you are my mother, I love you, and it's like, what the fuck are we watching? It's beautiful and amazing. I love it so much. It's like they just go all in. They just have so much confidence in their vision, and they just don't hold anything back, and I really appreciate that.
If they had really established this, like, that tortured nature that you're talking about, maybe I would have felt something. But the fact that it comes in late, so late in the movie, too, is, like, almost like, you know, like, so, like, that late, it just seems like such an afterthought.
Well, I don't agree, because there's also like the sense that the aliens that have come from the tree, like the facehuggers, that they are more intelligent and more human-like than a regular alien would be because of Ripley's DNA. And then Ripley is more like has less emotion and is kind of and more like superhuman, and obviously because of the alien DNA and has less affect and less humanity because of it. So it's like built into the very beginning of the movie that then obviously the ultimate culmination of this like science experiment is going to be the ultimate conflict between the two. Like,
But not,
and like
I
when I describe it
conflict.
That way, it sounds very like serious and stuff. But the people who are making it know that that's ridiculous, and so they make it ridiculous. But they somehow made me care about it too. I can't explain it. It really worked, and I'm sad that it didn't work for you because I want you to feel the way I feel about this movie.
Especially like I feel like it's fitting the tone of the rest of the movie, but like that tone is so over the top and ridiculous.
Exactly.
I mean, when
because...
you have a guy who's like kills one of our antagonists by having the chest burster impale him through the head, you know what kind of movie you're getting here, I hope.
well, I mean, you knew what kind of movie you got when the guy was having an orgasm, you know, breathing on the window, separating him from the alien.
I think that's just Brad Dourif. I think he's just like that normally. I mean,
I guess it's just a judgment thing on the director. Then, you know, the director's like, I want a guy who looks like he's going to orgasm if he breathes.
He's the right actor.
He is. I mean, they cast him perfectly for that.
I think honestly, though, in this age of like mega franchise filmmaking and stuff, where everything is dictated by like the super producer at the center of the franchise, and like it's just like Hollywood is so in deep on like franchise as like the essence of life in terms of how like filmmaking will continue into the future, like you have to appreciate that Alien Resurrection is a movie that just totally like craps all over the idea that a franchise should exist just because it exists. Like, it's ridiculous that this movie should exist. they closed the storyline. They should not resurrect Sigourney Weaver just because she is the marketable star of the movie. Like, there's no reason for that. And they just lean hard into it, and they just give, like, a big F you to Hollywood in doing it. And I just love it. I think it's so great. Okay. I think that when we're in, like Zack Snyder's, like, Justice League 7, like, go back and watch Alien Resurrection and, like, tell me that this isn't foretelling all of what Hollywood will become in the future, you know? Like, and a delicious satirical comedy commentary on that.
You might be right on that. I mean, I'm still rooting for a alien themed romantic comedy. I think there's a lot of potential there, but yeah.
I mean, I feel like I've kind of said my piece on this franchise. I still feel like the first two are just head and shoulders above anything else that's come after. I don't know. I just don't know if I can get excited for another Alien sequel. I mean, you can make a great movie out of anything, but
don't you feel like we have to see the last one though? Like, they have to close David's arc.
Do we?
What is he? He has thousands of embryos and bodies that he can experiment on in that ship. Like, yeah. Something crazy is going to happen. Like, you got to see how it ends, right?
Yeah.
We got to know how that connects to that one space jockey on the planet that they run into. You have to close the loop. That's what Rogue One taught me, is that you need to close the loop literally as precisely as possible.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's nothing. I can't imagine, like, whatever they do with David, especially as it's so tied to creating these alien creatures. None of that is going to be as scary to me as just, like, this kind of stuff occurring in nature with no explanation.
Well, yeah, we're well past it being scary.
Yeah. And that's a shame.
I think
what an alien movie should be. I mean, I think that's what the first two movies are. And I feel like since then, we just never really... with, like, a few exceptions, like, I think there are some good sequences in Prometheus, maybe, more in the atmosphere building than anything else. That
not when the engineer like just charges see... at them like a linebacker?
He really does that look didn't like work. A linebacker with that uniform.
Yeah.
He does.
So, I don't know, that's my piece on it. I think I've already kind of made that clear.
Okay, have I swayed you at all into reconsidering Resurrection?
No.
Have I at least made you respect me a little bit more for feeling the way I do about it?
Yes, I feel like I have a better understanding, and I'm not just like, this is crazy. How could someone think this is a good movie, better than the original Alien, which was my initial thoughts. But I think you've done a good job of explaining why
good.
It works for you, even if it doesn't work for me. How about you, Aaron?
Yeah, so I generally agree that the first two Alien movies are the ones that count. I think I also agree with Alex that Alien 4 really is emblematic of sort of the direction that all this franchising is going in. And I would say, even so, just because we might feel narratively that we need to see how this franchise ends doesn't mean we actually have to see how it ends, because we already all know how it's going to end. There's only one way it can end, and it's got to be Alien. It's got to be David getting killed by his creations. It's the only way it can end and have any sort of respectable conclusion. So there you are. I can't recommend strongly enough against supporting this franchise. It was
no,
it is a franchise that relies on technique and expert writing in order to be effective, and there has not been either of those things since Aliens. So that's the closing thought.
Well, and I'll just say that I feel like I'm six films in. I'm in too deep now. I have to see how it finishes. And if I can get another film just to see more of Michael Fassbender as Ridley Scott's bizarre, like, robotic muse, then I'm going to do that, because because that alone is worth the price of admission as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'll agree with you on, yeah, I'll agree with you on Fassbender, and certainly, God, I just wish he were, I just also appreciate watching him in other things.
But, like Assassin's Creed?
No.
Remember when we thought that was going to be a good movie?
Yeah. No, I don't remember when that was going to be a good movie.
Before we segue further, let's talk about...
Yes.
Maybe let's talk about where we can find everybody these days. So, Aaron, is there anywhere on the internet we can find you, or a Twitter account or anything like that?
No. Okay. No, law school pretty much torpedoed that, but I hope to get something started up again soon. So,
cool.
There you are.
Cool. And how about you, Alex?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MediaThinkings. And also on Letterboxd, where I will continue to review beautifully ridiculous French films in built in the American Hollywood studio system.
And as for me.
Also, before we go, I want to say Winona Ryder gets a lot of flack for her performance in Resurrection, and I didn't think it was that bad. Like, it certainly wasn't great, but it wasn't that bad.
So, better or worse than her performance in Stranger Things?
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by better or worse. I think that's a discussion that's too long for our closing segment.
All right. I'll leave it there, then.
Okay.
As for me, you can find my stuff, as always, at thecinemaverick.com, where I post reviews and other things, and I also have been reviewing some films on Letterboxd, though I seem to always be behind on that somehow. So if you want to know how I felt about a film I watched a week ago, then you'll definitely be able to find stuff there. I want to thank our listeners for making it this far with us, I want to thank both of you as well for having this discussion with me. I'm glad we all got this off our chests, or out of our chests. On that bad joke, I will say farewell.
So long.
Adios.